From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour, starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Coach Onandi. Our guest today is Rashaan Baker. He is the Prince George's County Executive. If you have questions or comments for him, start calling now, 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org, a tweet at Kojo Show, or go to our website, ask him a question, or make a comment at kojoshow.org. Rashaan Baker, thank you so much for joining us.
Kojo, thank you for having me.
Good Tom to be here. Sherwood, always a pleasure.
Happy to be here.
Tom,
I have a bit of an allergy problem, which means my voice is worse than normal.
Tom Sherwood is a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. It falls to you, Tom Sherwood, to explain the tactical maneuvering that went on that resulted in the next Supreme Justice in the Commonwealth of Virginia being Judge Stephen R. McCullough. He is an appeals court judge, but until this last few days, his name was not featured prominently in this discussion at all. What was the tactical parliamentary maneuver that resulted in this?
Do you want our listeners to hang up?
You covered the General Assembly.
Listen, this is a pledge drive. This is
Rashaan Baker was in a General Assembly.
Listen,
between the two of you, you should be able to explain.
I assure you, the people, rather than trying to take the onion layers off of that thing, people would rather me talk about Pepco Exelon again. And the fact is the Republican majorities in the Virginia General Assembly have been fighting for months with Governor McAuliffe about the appointee to the Supreme Court. In a nuclear move, they threatened to nominate Ken Cuccinelli, one of the most conservative guys in the Republican Party, to be on the court. He didn't really want to be on there, but that prospect scared enough people that the Republicans came up with their own nominee, and they supposed to vote on it this morning, I think, and be done with it.
And I think when they vote on it, it will be Judge Stephen R. McCullough. But it was a little more complicated than that, but not anything that you'd really, really be interested in. As Tom said,
it's a power struggle in the Virginia legislature where the Republicans are dominant in the House, tied in the Senate. And with a Democratic governor, it's a very difficult governing situation.
And this had to do with
know anything about
nothing
that
like nothing this like what's happening
with,
in Maryland.
This had to do with flipping a Democrat and then flipping a Republican. Ultimately, the Republican majority got what it wanted. You mentioned Pepco Exelon. It's interesting that the deal has been set back, of course, by the Public Service Commission of the District of Columbia. But as you and Mary Che pointed out on this broadcast 2 years ago, the quibbling in this $6.8 billion deal is really only about $78 million and what's supposed to happen
to it. It feels like 2 years ago. It was only 2 weeks ago.
Exactly right. But it would appear that Pepco and Exelon are going to come back with a proposal that allows the $78 million to be used in the way that Mayor Muriel Bowser wanted it used, and that is to relieve the rates of residents over the next up until the year 2019.
Politics of this is a nearly $7 billion energy merger between Exelon, the major energy company, and Pepco. They've been trying to get the Public Service Commission to approve it. There was a compromise that Mayor Bowser put out late last year that would allow a lot of money to go to community events and whatever, and a rate relief for residential payers. But the Public Service Commission said that wasn't a very good deal, and they told the Pepco and Exelon people they have to, all nine parties to this deal have to approve something different, and they didn't. And Pepco essentially said, well, we'd like for the Public Service Commission to reconsider what was proposed originally by Mayor Bowser and the others, and for them to go forward and just approve that without getting all nine parties to agree to it, because all nine parties are not going to agree to it. It's very complicated, but the main thing is for people to know March 11th, today, was the deadline for this merger to be done by the Public Service Commission, because Pepco proposed a new version of a merger agreement, there is no deadline.
And it should be pointed out that New Jersey, Virginia, Delaware, Maryland, and those softies in Maryland signed off on this earlier on.
Mr. Baker will bring you in on that.
Yes, he was one of the county executives.
And PepsiCo say that if this deal doesn't go through in the District of Columbia, the deal's already reached in Maryland, New Jersey, and Delaware, and parts of Virginia, won't go forward either. Did you have a position on whether Exelon should become our power company?
Yeah, I did. I mean, we negotiated with PepsiCo and Exelon for a number of months. We structured a deal that we thought was in the best interest of the people of Prince George's County, same way with Montgomery County. And so, you know, we structured it so that if they get a better deal somewhere else, that, you know, if the district or anyone else negotiates a better deal, then the people of Maryland and Prince George's County will benefit from that.
But fundamentally, you agree that PepsiCo will run better if Exelon runs it?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we thought bringing in Exelon would help PepsiCo, would help our ratepayers, and eventually would, you know, provide the type of support that, you know, for the problems we've had in the past with outage and snowstorms and things of that nature. And we, but it was a long fought negotiations. We conveyed that to the people of District of Columbia, the mayor and the council, that we worked out what we thought was a great deal for Prince George's County and the state of Maryland.
I just don't, as a reporter, there are many people who just say PepsiCo doesn't need this. Even Betty Ann Cain, the chairman of our Public Service Commission, the politics of it is that PepsiCo could just run itself better by running itself better. It doesn't have to bring in this huge company to come in and tell PepsiCo what to do. PepsiCo would know what to do, and the Public Service Commission will just make it do its job. They certainly make a lot of money for their stockholders. Seems to me the politics of it is they ought to just do their job.
What's the, if it's not today, March 11th, what's the final
date? It's open-ended now because PepsiCo made this proposal. That means that each party, each person wants to be involved, has 10 days to respond to the PepsiCo proposal. And then if anyone responds to the PepsiCo proposal, then people get a chance to respond to those, to the response. It's open-ended.
Well, our guest is Roshan Baker. He is the executive of Prince George's County. You can ask him a question by calling 800-433-8850, by sending email to kojo@wamu.org. Mr. Baker, the Purple Line is moving forward. They have chosen the builders. However, they're asking Montgomery County to chip in nearly $14 million in additional Purple Line costs. That's because the contract that was negotiated by the state has doubled in terms of the cost of building elevators to connect the new rail line with the Bethesda Metro station. How do you feel about this at this point? Do you foresee further bumps ahead? You're not satisfied with the increases in cost of Prince George's and Montgomery County.
No, I'm not. I've made it very clear to the state and to the governor when we put the additional $20 million in to this project that would be it for Prince George's County. Montgomery County has to make its own decisions. But originally, we put $110 million of taxpayer money from Prince George's County into a state project. This is a state project. It's going to benefit not just Prince George's County and Montgomery County, but Anne Arundel, Howard County, and the state at large. And so I'm unwilling when we put the, which was controversial, given the fact that we can't raise revenues in the county, to put the extra $20 million in was not easy. We did that, and you know, we think that this, we worked out a great deal. We think the governor and the state should move the deal forward.
Well, you call it a state project, but last year when Governor Hogan announced that, A, the project was going to go forward, but B, he's going to cut $532 million of state funding out, which left the state funding initially, I think, was something like $700 million. I mean, I just thought it was a remarkable sleight of hand for the governor to stand up and say, yeah, it's going to go forward, but we're not going to pay for it. And now it seems to me you and Montgomery County are being nibbled to death by ducks. And every couple of weeks, something new comes up. Right now it's Montgomery County and $14 million more to make the elevators or escalators or whatever it is work in Bethesda. And then next week it'll be something else. And it seems to me if the state's not wholeheartedly into this, and the governor doesn't seem to be, then how can you go to the federal government and get the $900 million that you need from the federal government.
Is that your concern with Sean Baker?
It seems to me the governor is bleeding. That's going to bleed this and leave it to you guys. If Montgomery and Prince George's don't step up, this won't happen.
No, it is my concern, and we raised it. And it's a concern, you know, the county executive of Montgomery County, when we raised it with the governor, that this is a beneficial project for the state. It helps us grow our commercial tax base. It helps us attract residents to come to the state of Maryland. And it's going to help businesses in the state of Maryland. And this should be wholehearted in. We're willing to pay our part. Montgomery County is willing to pay its part. But the state has to play that role. So we've not only said that to the governor, but we've also said that to the legislative body, which has a role in this, both the speaker and the president of the Senate, that this is an important project for businesses. We said it to business leaders that they need, who have the ear of the governor, they need to tell him how important this is and how this is going to benefit them for the long haul.
If I'm the federal highway official, I'm federal transit officials that have to make this decision, I look and say, well, Maryland, the state, has reduced its investment from 700 to 160 something. They cut out $532 million. Where's the state enthusiasm for this project? Why should the federal government get involved?
Well,
I think it's a real hurdle that he's creating for you guys.
Yeah, he's making it difficult. But what we've said in the negotiations with our federal partners, Senator Mikulski, Senator Cardin, Congressman Hoyer and Edwards and everyone, Van Hollen, is that this is important for the state of Maryland. We want you to let the federal government know how important this project is and how long we've been working on it. We work with the Secretary of Transportation for the state, and early on in the Hogan administration, I thought we had very great substantive conversations. But you can't nickel and dime, you know, the jurisdictions to death. I know for us,
that's what it feels like to me, and I'm not in either jurisdiction.
Yeah, well, I've made it very clear that Prince George's County, we don't have any more money. We put our amount up.
Speaking of money, you announced the county's 2017 budget. One of your priorities, schools. Last year, there was that major fight over a property tax increase. What about 2017?
Well, 2017, I did not announce a property tax increase. It doesn't mean that our schools don't need more money. We're going to put $1.9 billion into our school system this year. It's an increase. We think this will help move the progress that the school system has made. We've seen our graduation rates go up. We've seen enrollment in our schools go up. So we feel really good. So we were able to do that. But part of the reasons we were able to do it is, quite honestly, we're going to use projected revenues from the mid-year opening of the MGM National Harbor.
$19 million.
$19 million. If we did not have that facility coming on board, we would not have the money we need to put into the school system. That's not, you know, but we're an expanding jurisdiction. Our school enrollment is 128,000 students.
128,000?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe we're the 25th largest school district in the United States. We're the second largest in the state of Maryland. We're going to have a conversation in the county on how we as a county, because it's clear the state is not going to put the money in terms of this current administration into the county. We're not going to see the $20 million that was taken away from us last year for the cost of educating students in the Washington region. So we as a county are going to have a difficult conversation about, you know, how we fund ourselves.
Let's talk about MGM for a moment, because that's a really big deal. There's a lot of, you know, people opposed the idea of MGM having the gambling.
They sure did, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And now you're spending money that you haven't yet collected. But so this $19 million from MGM, the projection is they're going to open later this year. They still don't have an opening date. I mean, do you have one they've told you that they haven't announced?
Well, they don't have a solid date that they've given, but I feel really confident they're going to open the facility around somewhere between November and December. It will open this year. The revenues will come in mid-year into our budget cycle, and so we'll be able to use those revenues.
So the $19 million is money that they expect, is your share of the money that they earn from having the casino open.
That is correct.
And so if it opens, when is the year? Is what's your budget year?
Our budget year runs from July to July. So it's about halfway you know, between. So we feel confident about the projections.
Does that mean that in a normal year you'd get $40 million from them?
Yeah, we're projecting $40 million in North, we hope. But I think, you know, if you haven't seen the facility yet, the reason why I pushed it so hard, and I came on this show, and I was very upfront with folks that, you know, I don't gamble, and I voted against gaming when I was in the General Assembly. But if we're going to have this fifth facility, this facility in the county, what I wanted was a facility that wasn't just built on slot machines and table games, but was an entertainment venue. If you see what MGM, which is going to be a $1.3 billion facility, it really is more than just that. It is an entertainment venue, and we're starting to see the fruits of that. People are already, and conventions are already looking to come to National Harbor because it's there.
And if, in fact, you're going to be using that revenue to help your schools, this is what they would really call a high-stakes gamble. So we're going to take a short...
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to take a short
That's
break.
That's a good place to break.
Because this is the last scheduled day of our spring membership campaign, and we need to tell you some more about that. But when we come back, we'll also continue our conversation with Rashawn Baker, Prince George's County Executive. I'm Kojo Namdi.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black changemakers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Go to WAMU.org/lifteveryvoice to learn the stories of these incredible African-American changemakers and to hear special interviews spotlighting those who have impacted the arts, sciences, sports, and activism. Go to WAMU.org/lifteveryvoice.
Welcome back to the Politics Hour, where our guest is Rashawn Baker. He is the Prince George's County Executive, taking your calls at 800-433-8850. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. Tomorrow, Tom Sherwood, Republican voters in the District of Columbia will have the opportunity to choose their primary candidate. And it's the first time that I've, since in my own memory, that the Republicans have had a separate date for a primary.
Right.
In the district
they've usually tag on to the primary, but they're doing a convention this year. It's tomorrow from 10 o'clock to 9 o'clock at the Lowe's Madison Hotel at 15th and M Street. They expect as more than 2,000 to up to 6,000 people to stop by and vote. This tiny little D.C. Republican Party gets 19 delegates.
More than Delaware, than any of the territories.
And if you watch what's happening on the national news about whether there'll be a brokered Republican convention in Cleveland, I'll be there later in July, July 18th.
D.C. will be able to flex its muscle.
I don't know how much muscle 19 votes are, but, you know, there's something like 27,000 registered Republicans in the District of Columbia. They make up 6% of the electorate in the city, so they're not real big in city politics. But, you know, if you're a Republican and you're sitting around tomorrow, you should stop by the Madison Hotel at 15th and M Street and vote for your candidate and see what happens. Marilyn, while we've got Mr. Baker here,
yes,
are you supporting Hillary Clinton?
I will, you know, since my candidate...
No, he's already starting to summon. That's a yes or a no.
His candidate was the former governor of Maryland, Martin O'Malley.
That was ancient history.
Yeah, he is no longer in the race.
You've had, like you and Governor Hogan, you have something in common with Governor Hogan. You're both reluctant to pick a new candidate. He was for Christie, and he got just angry this week.
I am reliably informed that Mr. Baker has picked his new candidate.
I have picked my candidate. I'm going to go with Hillary. I think she gives us the best chance of winning the presidency. I think her experience will do as well. So I'm looking forward to casting my vote for her.
Senator Tim Kaine, yesterday I saw him at the National Press Club. He was speaking to Hispanic and African-American publishers who were, for the first time in 20 years, were having a joint session. And he complained about, without saying Trump's name, complained about all the kind of the racist, insensitive rhetoric that's been characterizing the Republican campaign, at least up until last night's debate. And he said it was the death spiral of people who are no longer going to be the majority in this country. suggesting that white people, very conservative white people, who fear all the change, don't understand the change, the growing Hispanic, growing African-American presence in this country. He says he doesn't think some of those people are racist in terms of hate, but he thinks there's a great deal of fear about the change in the country. Just wondering if you have any big thoughts like that.
No, I mean, I think he's right on this in this respect. I think what you see in Trump in the debates, and I actually have this conversation with the young adults who occupy my house sometimes, and it's called my children. It is the fear. I mean, Trump and to an extent, Cruz, play on the fear that people have about losing their jobs, losing the glory days of this country, and somehow we're not as strong around the world as we were. I mean, it's the fears. It's not based on policy or reality. It goes to the worst fears that people have in themselves. And so I think that's why you see, and it's not just Democrats who feel this way, Republicans are the same way. That's why you see people, you know, like Mitt Romney, who is the governor of Massachusetts, and Jeb Bush, you know, trying to build up, you know, an anti-Trump, but to a lesser extent, an anti-Cruz, because they see that happening.
Well, it seems to me we're in a replay of the 1960s where the progressives are very angry about things that are not being done, right, and the conservatives are very angry that things are not being done in their respect. We have a lot of turmoil here.
Yeah, no, I agree absolutely. You just hit it on the same. It's the same thing. I mean, you see Bernie Sanders on our side, which a lot of things he is saying that people agree with. But the reality, if you ever run a government, is some of that stuff just cannot happen, you know, or it's very difficult. You know, when I hear about universal health care, I don't think there's either Hillary Clinton or Martin O'Malley or President Obama doesn't want universal health care. But at the same time, you have to get it through a Congress.
Well, let me ask you about that. Speaking of Congress, you know, next week on this very program, we will have the first debate in the Chris Van Hollen, Donna Edwards race for the Senate. And I believe you've endorsed Chris Van Hollen. As best you can, put on your hat as an analyst. And how's that going?
No, I think it's going to be a very close and tight race.
What should we ask them?
I think that what I would ask them about is delivering resources back to the state. And, you know, that's going to be the main thing. We talked about transportation funding, how important that is. We talked about the FBI, economic.
You're losing Barbara Mikulski.
And we're losing Barbara Mikulski, and we're losing somebody who's been able to be a big player in that stage and deliver for us. But it's also going to require somebody who can work. Let's work in the reality. And that is, you've got a divided, you know, Congress. You've got
it's going to be a Republican House regardless of what happens.
And the Senate is always going to be very close. So the individual going over there has to be able to work with both sides of the aisle to make sure they can get things done for the state.
And you think Van Hollen has more skill and more experience, more so than Donna Edwards?
I do. I mean, I think he's got the temperament and the skill level as being the number fourth ranking member at one time in the House, but also the key person on the budget committee. For me, as a county executive, I look at that ability to get things done. I think he can do that on the other side. I think Don is very smart, very progressive, a great story. But I think hitting the ground running on the other side, being able to work with the Republicans to get things through.
Do you think the presidential primary with Hillary Clinton on the ballot will help Donna Edwards in terms of she's appealing to women voters? They're fairly close in various polls that are run. But Van Hollen has far more money. But do you think the presidential campaign will influence the senatorial race?
I don't think it has this is my honest answer. I don't think it has the greatest impact as.
But listen up, people. He said he's going to give us an honest answer.
Straight. That means Scott, my press person, is going to have a heart attack. I think what's going to have more of an impact, quite honestly, is what happens in Baltimore City. I think the turnout in Baltimore City in the mayor's race there has a greater impact, a large African American contingency there. I think in terms of Secretary Clinton, I think that benefits both of them. I think there are people who support Chris, women out here who like what's going on and support Hillary Clinton. And I think there are people who support Donna who the same way. But I think it's going to be a close race, you know, and I think what happens in Baltimore City and the turnout that happens in Prince George's County, Montgomery County.
Will you campaign for Van Hollen? Then I'll let Kojo get a word in there.
Yes, I will. I've talked to him. I will campaign. And so, because I think people need to know why I'm supporting someone who is from Montgomery County against someone from Prince George's County and why I think that's the best, why he's the best person for Prince George's County.
How about the race for Donna Edwards' seat? You've endorsed Glenn Ivey, but Anthony Brown is at this point leading in that race. Will you also be out campaigning for Glenn Ivey?
I certainly will. I think that's the same thing. If you look at, and I know all these people personally, and I personally like them.
Like which one? Anthony Brown.
Anthony Brown, okay. You know. Donna Edwards, I like her. I think, but in this race, you know, Glenn's not only proven himself in Prince George's County as a state's attorney, but his background, when I met him, he and my wife worked on the Hill together. And so he knows the players up there. He's been on the Senate side. He knows the players there. He can hit the ground running. And so if I call him up and say, how do I get more money into the transportation budget? He's going to know how to do that right away. Those are the things that I need with 3 years left as county executive that I think he can deliver. And I think he's the kind of guy, Glenn is the type of person that's going to be able to bridge Prince George's County, the state, and the federal government.
You mentioned your wife. You've been very public about the challenges you've faced with your wife. Today is former First Lady Nancy Reagan's funeral. You tweeted your condolences and appreciation for her work around Alzheimer's research, and you yourself are being honored by the Alzheimer's Association for your work at the Brain Ball in May.
Yes, a very, and you know, it's a special day for us. When Nancy Reagan, the First Lady, came out and talked about President Reagan having Alzheimer's, you couldn't have told me at that time, seven, 10 years later, I would be going through the same thing with my wife, who would be barely 50 years old. But her public stance and her ability to come out, this is Nancy Reagan, come out and raise money around this issue and to make people not feel like they have to hide this. That meant a lot, and it made it easier for my family and I to come out and talk about, you know, the brave struggle that my wife does every day. And you know personally, Kojo, how much she loves you and how much she listens to this show. And so to have people fighting every day to get the research and awareness is important.
Tom?
Well, whether it's Alzheimer's or autism for children, there's just a tremendous feeling that so many people have so many troubles in their own families, and you just don't know about it. You're a prominent person. But there's so many people struggling in so many ways. Whether it's illness or whether it's income inequality. I just really think we're at a time in the country where a lot of changes are going to be made about how we're going to go forward.
Right.
And that's what this whole presidential
campaign
is.
We want to get back to some of the challenges you're facing in your budget and in Prince George's County. An awkward turn here to domestic violence. It's an issue you're trying to tackle. Just this week, three women were murdered. How do you plan to address that?
Well, one of the things we did, and yes, it was two young women were murdered in Prince George's County, not far from where I live. In fact, one of the young ladies went to Suitland High School, where my daughters went to high school. Domestic violence has been an issue that the state's attorney, Angela, also broke in, and our sheriff, Melvin High, and our police department, we've been looking at for years. Of the 18 homicides we've had in Prince George's County, 8 of them are domestic and family related. So what we said a couple of weeks ago, even before this incident happened with the two young ladies, when the gentleman killed his baby and the baby's mother, we said we've got to do something, and it's not simply about putting more money into our police department or the state's attorneys. We've got to figure out a way to how do we stop this from happening? How do we intercede? And so one of the things is that we put $1 million into the budget this year to work with domestic violence advocacy groups, but also to work with our apartments around Prince George's County, where a lot of these incidents are happening.
And actually have social workers in those apartments,
have
in empty
them
apartments.
In the apartments, in the neighborhoods, you know, part of the community, so that as neighbor to neighbor, you say, hey, I'm going through this. A lot of times they're not going to call us and the government and say, hey, I'm having problems with my child's mother or my son is having problems. But they do talk to neighbors, and they talk to the faith community. And so embedding these social workers and psychologists inside the apartments, I think, is a way that we're going to look to try and
I think one program was to educate the ministers, the pastors throughout the county, so that they will be sensitive to what should be followed up on.
Right. And what resources are available. One of the pastors said, we're glad to help, but we need to know what resources are available when someone comes to us for counseling. But we just believe that there are signs that we're missing before the incident happens, and we hope this little bit of money that we're putting in there will go a long way up of us curving this. It is a critical issue we've got to get a handle on.
Is there something more the state can do? Because it's a difficult subject, but I do want to transition to your potentially running for governor and things you think you can do. You've been aggressively questioning Hogan's ability to work with you. You say he's not working with you, cooperating collegially with you on some things. He responds, or his administration responds, that your county gets more money than anybody else and more support than anyone else. But whether it's domestic violence or whether it's the Purple Line or any of these other national issues, state issues, you have to be coy about running for governor now. But where can you best possibly say you stand in looking at that
before race? You answer the question about running for governor, allow me to interject. Larry Hogan was a Republican. He was not expected to win the governor's race. Anthony Brown was expected to win the race. What did you expect him to do? Act like a Democratic governor of Maryland?
No. What we expected and what we were hoping for was that he would act like the governor of Maryland. And that is when there are problems around the state, you try to address them. And there are areas around the state that have unique problems and you try to work. We talk about domestic violence. If you look at the money that we got from the governor's office for GOCAP, which is their crime prevention program. Under the O'Malley administration, the number of dollars we got in the county to help the state's attorney's office and to help our sheriff's office, under the Hogan administration, that money has gone down.
Significantly?
Significantly. If you look at, we talk about embedding social workers and psychologists in the apartments. Well, that's money coming from the county. But our Department of Social Services is a joint agency between the county and the state. And we haven't seen the rise in funding to deal with this issue. Domestic violence. The number of homicides that have happened in Prince George's County, in Baltimore City, and around the state is not just an epidemic for Prince George's County and Montgomery County or Baltimore City. It's for the state. And so that is a state issue where the governor's office should be working just as hard as we are to figure out how do we stem that. And so those are the things. We talk about our new health care, hospital. That's not just, doctors coming in and doing heart surgery. That's also dealing with psychiatrists and psychologists and mental health issues. And so those
child
are the
care
areas.
Issues, child care issues, pediatric. Yeah. Well, where is the hospital has been a big deal. I mean, I was wondering, Howard University is looking to redo its hospital. It's been talking to United Medical Center in Southeast about joining together. In fact, they're officially looking at combining those two hospitals and building a new one in Southeast. Why don't you partner with Howard University and put that new hospital in Chevrolet?
Well, here's the thing.
Nobody wants to buy a money-losing hospital. That's why.
Well, you're right. But look what we did in the hospital situation in Dimensions in Chevrolet. We brokered for the first time, ever. We've been trying to work on this deal for 20, 25 years, as long as I've been involved in politics. We brokered a deal where Prince George's County would pick up, a third of the cost. Dimensions would pick up a third of the cost, and the state would pick up a third of the cost, and we would bring in University of Maryland Medical System and team together to build a regional facility and connect care throughout. Great partnership. Everything is going smoothly until this administration. and not with just the building of the hospital, but the ongoing operations. The citizens of Prince George's County took on the debt of Dimensions. We took that off the table because we assumed it, so that that hospital could be built and that you could have the second busiest trauma center not go
Governor
down.
Governor Hogan, again, disagreeing, says that Senator Mike Miller has wrecked the plans for the Prince George's, what the state's going to do, Senator, because he's pushing the Senate to approve the hospital without working with the governor.
No. Senator Mike Miller and Speaker Bush did what they had to do and what many of us was calling on them to do, and that is the governor did not put the money in last year. He did not negotiate with us in good faith for our entire year. He did not put the money in this year, the $15 million, until Senator Miller and Speaker Bush put in bills that said, you know what, let's take the politics out of health care. Let's put it in legislation. Let's not leave it to this governor or future governors. Let's put it in there, put the money in. And that takes it completely out of politics of it. And if the governor truly cares about health care and making this work, all he has to do is support the bills and sign it when it gets to his desk.
Hasn't done that yet, and it brings us back to the question that Tom raised earlier. You are term limited in your position as county executive. There's been a great deal of speculation, some of it made here, about a possible run for the governor's seat. But what's next for you after your final term? You're a career politician at this point.
When's it up? When is your term up?
No, my term is up in 2018.
2018?
And you know,
how convenient.
I tell people, you know, I spent 8 years in the House of Delegates, and then I spent 8 years outside in the private sector running a nonprofit, and then I came back as county executive. No, I'm, you know, I'm focused on, you know, the last 3 years of my administration and continuing to grow from Prince George's County. We've seen the largest number of...
Well, that's the best way to run for governor, is to do a good job in Prince George's County.
And we're
excited. Those are not competing interests.
We're raising, you know, we're expanding our commercial tax base. Development. Just think about it. There's $7 to $6 billion worth of development that's happening in Prince George's County all over, all 500 square miles. That has never happened before, and is not happening around the state anywhere like it's happening.
In other words, he's not answering that question.
Well, he's answering it, so he's got to do a good job.
Time at this point.
Do you have to fundraise again?
We do have to fundraise because this is the last scheduled day of our spring membership campaign. Rashawn Baker is a member of WMU 88.5. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
He also happens to be Prince George's County
Executive.
He also happens to be Prince George's County Executive. We don't have time. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current newspapers. When we come back, more about this last scheduled day of our spring membership campaign. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button and thanks.